Danny Boy.
Thank you, Dominator. It's 10:10. This is John Williams.
The pipes.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. Downtown is busy. It's day after Thanksgiving, busy downtown Chicago. It's packed. Michigan Avenue has folks all decked out in green. They're, of course, heading towards or from the green Chicago River, getting ready for the noontime parade Domiti told you about.
The summer's ago, and all the
The river expected to go an extra block east in the dye this year, all the way down to state. And at noon, they'll kick her off. You know, red, blue, green, purple, and orange lines have more service if you're coming downtown. Starts at Balbo, goes Columbus Drive, north to Monroe. St. Patrick's Day began as a religious holiday to honor the saint who in the 5th century introduced Christianity to Ireland. In 1762, the first St. Patrick's Day parade took place in New York. 1762. That's how far back the Irish celebrations go in this country. 149 million people in the United States will celebrate St. Patrick's Day today. 27% of Americans today will go to a bar or restaurant to celebrate. So drive carefully. 83% of the people celebrating in the country, which is about half of us, virtually all of them will be wearing green. I am a witness to that as we speak. I've got a green, white, and green check shirt on with a green sweater. Griffin is wearing Butler Bulldog blue and gray. But that's more about March Madness. According to legends, St. Patrick drove the snakes from Ireland. The Chicago River, if you're coming downtown, should maintain its green hue. They say for about 5 or 6 hours, and then it dissipates. It won't be like this tomorrow or the next day. 32 million people in the United States have Irish ancestry. Here's a fun fact. Jennifer Aniston had one of her first starring roles in the original Leprechaun, released in 1993. Huh, I didn't know that. Ireland's global rank in beer consumption per capita, you want to guess? Joe, you're a numbers guy. Ireland's rank in global beer consumption per capita is?
Say 2.
Number 6.
Oh, sorry, Ireland.
United States is 21. Let's get it done, Ireland. You're saying, John, who's 1 through 5? I have no idea. You got the Google, look it up. So happy St. Pat's Day, gang. Enjoy the day. Be safe. Wear green. And boy, if you're lucky, eat some of Lindsay's. Lou's producer, Lindsay, made some chipped beef with potato rolls and a little sauce. Oh, they're good. With some Smittick's beer.
It just melt in your mouth.
Oh, my gosh. Did she bring it today? Listen, just a quick note. I've talked too much about that dancing thing I did, but I just should give the folks in Chicago who organized it, and almost all of them are somehow affiliated with the Arthur Murray Dance Studios in Chicago. They've got 9 locations I've been dancing with and advertising for them, and they deserve all the credit. They raised, I think it was, a couple $100,000 last night to fight breast cancer, to provide research, to get mammograms to women who might not otherwise. What a great cause. What a fun event. The video of me finally dancing. I mean, I've been rehearsing for 6 weeks, twice a week. The video of me dancing, if you want to see it, and you don't have to, is on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. The comments below are funny because the names with the comments are Rita, Mary, Sue, Karen, Lois. Not many Chucks weighing in saying, hey, John, I wanted to check out the dance. Good job. A couple of guys in there. I went to the Baltimore Sun today to see how they are reporting the University of Maryland Baltimore County win, the first 16 seed ever to beat a 1 seed. When you saw UMBC on the schedule, you thought that was University of Missouri at British Columbia, didn't you? You didn't know what UMBC was, and it didn't matter because it was a 16. It did not matter. The Baltimore Sun reports today in the headline, we don't even have a football team. Now we won. Disbelief and pride as UMBC basketball upsets Virginia. Here's the local story there. Never before had it been done. A number 16 beat a number 1 in the NCAA basketball tournament. The radio announcers were calling it the greatest upset in NCAA history, perhaps in all of sports. We'll get to that in a second. On campus, they didn't know what to do. Where do we go? Someone shouted from a pack of undergrads to burst from the dorms. To the commons, they chanted, running on. Among the dozen or so was Sean Brown, a 19-year-old sophomore and biology major who figured a few hours earlier he might as well watch the game. Now he was overcome. Our school has changed forever, he shouted hoarsely. Overnight, this research university, known more for science than sports, they truly do have a good chess team, jumped into the record books of college basketball. This is a university where students are researching ways to build batteries from glucose found in the body. They're working to track pharmaceuticals through sewage treatment plants. They are studying the results in Latin America of free trade coffee. They're playing basketball too, but there was no one outside the commons when the students arrived. There were just a few fans, like freshman Michael Spano, hugging everyone he came across and telling them how this truly was the greatest moment of his life. And then the cheer arose. They didn't believe in us. They didn't believe in us. The pack, now perhaps 20 people, were more of a commuter school, Brown explained, carried on toward the heart of the campus, the statue of the UMBC mascot, a Chesapeake Bay retriever named True Grit. Standing before the dog, a 1966 alum was sobbing. Students flung themselves across the statue. They hugged it. They rubbed its nose, posed beside it for photos. No one gave UMBC a chance, junior Patrick Ogo said. We're known as the Brainiacs of Maryland. He shook his head. We don't even have a football team. Now we won? This is incredible. The university began in 1963 when the General Assembly authorized expansion of the University of Maryland system to include a new campus in Baltimore County. In 1966, they had a dance in the student cafeteria, and the mascot was decided it would be a Chesapeake Bay retriever. Now, 52 years later, the small crowd gathered around that retriever after having just watched the university beat the top-ranked basketball team in the country. How about that? We don't even have a basketball team. What are we going to do? Where do we go? And the mob scene was 20 students.
There's only 13,000 that go there, right?
Yeah, and a lot of them drive to school. They don't have big, they don't have a giant quad. They don't have all kinds of crazy fraternities just losing their minds.
It's good. Good for the nerds.
In Richmond, Virginia, where they were reporting their local loss, the first sentence is, "Move over, Chaminade." Virginia's famous for being a number one seed in the tournament three times in the last 5 or 8 years, but they're also famous for having, as a number one team, lost some games, including a non-NCAA tournament game. But when Ralph Sampson had them as the indomitable number one team in America, they went to Hawaii. We're just going to play a little basketball out here. They took on an NAIA team called the Chaminade Silver Swords, a school of about 900 students. Talk about your small commuter college. They took on the Chaminade Silver Swords, and they lost. That is considered one of the great upsets ever. And now Virginia has two in the top 10. Their basketball team.
I was looking at just a detail about that game was funny, that Chaminade was about to change the name of the college. But then they won that game, and they're like, all right, I guess we got to keep.
We are still the Silver. Everybody knows Silver Swords. Let's not lose that.
No, the name of the college, not their mascot.
Chaminade.
Yeah, they were going to be something else.
That is a weird name, isn't it?
What's wrong with Chaminade?
Chaminade. Chaminade.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but that was just a funny detail.
It was such a big win, and there was no video of it. It wasn't televised. I mean, this wasn't, 1923, but just nobody thought anything about it. The attendance at the game was in the hundreds. It was not a big deal. Ralph Sampson and Virginia is just going to go to Chaminade in Hawaii. They'll play a basketball game. They'll win. They'll come back, and then they'll start the real basketball play, and they lost, which maybe explains it. They just didn't take it seriously enough. But it was a big enough deal in 1982 that after the win, my friend Leo Alberto and I wrote a song about that game. I remember the first two lines, and they go like this. We're loyal to you, Silver Swords. We'll always be true, Silver Swords. And I don't remember the rest of the song.
Because you were in Hawaii at that time?
I was not in Hawaii, but I grew up in Hawaii, and okay. So I had a certain allegiance with Hawaii.
Sure.
In fact, sometimes when I really want to throw my Hawaii chops down, I say Hawaii. So there's that, 77-72. But how about this game, huh? Is this the bigger part of it, though, Sam? Joe. It's not that the 16 beat the 1, although that's historic, but that they beat them by 20 points.
20 points. I mean, honestly, I felt a little bit bad for the play-by-play guys because, you know, it was cutthroat down towards the end. You know, what's the final impact call? But for the last 2.5 minutes, they, you know, were just talking about it. And it, because the whole ambiance of the arena was just kind of stunned of what was happening, it really was truly just something that you'll always remember where you were.
Well, watching it in the moment, yeah, it wasn't those final seconds like you might expect. It was around 5 minutes to go in the game, I think, was the most exciting time, because that's when it really started to feel like they don't have enough time to score 14 points. Like, there's just no...
The way the game was going, huh?
Yeah, so when it got to like 3.5 minutes, that's when you really knew it was over. That was the most exciting time.
Right, and I mean, then you just have to sit and watch for another 3.5 minutes. I mean, it's wild. There's been so much talk about this happening, and it finally did.
But I've been on the rooting side for teams that were winning, and you knew that the other team was going to make a run. I mean, weren't you guys feeling that this isn't going to happen? Even down 14, Virginia's going to make a run. These things always collapse.
True, yeah.
Didn't happen.
I was feeling that way. And kind of like what Griff said, you know, 5 minutes, like, wow, this is really, really going to happen.
So what happened to the perfect brackets then? Oh, this is interesting. The perfect bracket story in a minute. So about the brackets real quick. This from NCAA.com.
John, I don't mean to cut you off. I do have the call, though.
Of the game?
Of the
UMBC game?
The radio call of, yeah, the final minute.
Oh, the local radio guy?
No, right. No, the national one.
The national one? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, this is probably anticlimactic. Let's hear it.
Oh, hang on. Got to figure out a button.
Jerome, the clock's going to run out. The ultimate upset has happened. A 16 has beaten a 1. UMBC knocks off Virginia 74-54. The madness has hit its peak as a 16 defeats a 1 for the first time in NCAA history. UMBC is that 16, 74-54. The Retrievers retrieve the first ever win for
nice.
A 16 against a 1.
Yeah.
Kevin Kugler. Yeah, I liked it. I like that.
That's about as good as it can get, because you're right, Griffin. It's not. He's not telling us about the big play. He's describing the game.
You're straining it, though. It's like, this, it really happened 10 minutes ago.
And by the way, it was really exciting about 10 minutes ago.
74-54.
It's
crazy.
NCAA.com says UMBC, and then they put in parentheses, because you don't know who they are, the University of Maryland Baltimore County scored the biggest upset, 74-54. First time a 16 is beaten a 1 in 136 tries. There's always 4-16-1 combos in each tournament, so divide 4 into 136. That's how many tournaments it's been seeded this way, and it's never happened. Before the Retrievers win through 28 games of this year's tournament, there were 25 perfect brackets. So 25 people in this country, through the first 28 games, they got it right, they got it right, they got it right. Those 11 sixes, they got those right. The 10, you know, sevens, whatever it is, they got those right. But they didn't get this one right. They tracked tens of millions of brackets at the Capital One March Madness Bracket Challenge, the ESPN Bracket Challenge, the Bleacher Report, Yahoo, and the big CBS one. Only 2% of all of those brackets picked the Retrievers to win. Still, 2%. Those are the people that go, I'm booting for the 16.
It was great on Twitter. Everyone was saying, oh, my kid really likes Golden Retrievers, so my 6-year-old daughter picked UMBC.
That's probably a part of it. Sure, the fun of bracket picking is picking them for silly reasons. 14% of the brackets in America not only had Virginia winning this game, 14% of the brackets had Virginia winning the whole thing, let alone this game. 14. After the first game of the tournament, 7-seed Rhode Island's overtime win over 10-seed Oklahoma, 55% of the brackets were dashed. Only 45% of the people picked the favored team to win, which is what you do. You see a 10-7, you go, there's no way. Rhode Island, that's a small state. Who heard of Rhode Island? Oklahoma will win that game. What do these people know? So you do that to yourself. Dante Egrim's last-second three-pointer propelled 11-seed Loyola Chicago over 6-seed Miami in the first upset of the tournament. And then you had number 14 Buffalo beating number 3 Arizona, like you saw that coming. And suddenly you were down to just a few thousand perfect brackets. And by the way, that Arizona loss was by 21 points, too. I mean, that was stunning. That would have been a conversation for a long time, but for this. Then 13-seed Marshall beats number 4 Wichita State. And suddenly you went to just a couple of hundred perfect brackets. Last year, one bracket stayed perfect for a record 39 games. There was a kid who got every game Thursday and every game Friday right, and every game right until Saturday night. This year, after 28 games, there were 25 perfect brackets. Butler beating Arkansas drove the national perfect bracket count from 14 to 7. West Virginia beat Murray State, and the number went to 6 perfect brackets. Number 7, Nevada, beat number 10, Texas. No one liked the 7 there either. It went from 6 perfect brackets to 2. And those last two people then correctly picked K-State. They correctly picked Michigan State winning. They had the Auburn and Xavier wins. And then Virginia loses, and there were none. Nobody's perfect anymore. It's 10:30. We got news with Doma Tipongo coming up next on WGN. Thank you, Dominator. It's 10:39. You and Lou Manfredini talked about your trip to Ghana. You just returned this past week. You missed our show last Saturday because you were leading a bunch of Chicagoans on a tour of the country that your family is from. That's yes. Ghana. While you were gone, I read a New York Times story about Ghana, and you were talking to Lou about the population of, is it Accra?
Yes, Accra.
Accra.
Yes.
The large city and then the country. And Lou was talking about your Instagram pictures and how lovely they were and the T-shirt you were wearing and how thoughtful that was. What I was reading while you were gone was that the economy in that country is actually one of the fastest improving economies in the world.
It is.
They are getting their act together there. I was so encouraged to see that.
Yeah, me too. It's encouraging. And even when you go there, you can feel the spirit. I think they're starting to get a handle on the tourism industry there. Before I left, we were talking about how a lot of these countries could do well to do more to let folks know that they do have some really good tourist attractions there, especially with a history as rich as what they have there. So you got that. You have the resources. You've got an oil boom going on there right now. You've got a lot of Americans relocating there too.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy for you. And you're right. I think it's not easy sometimes for countries to, when they have the resources, and they said there it's petroleum, it's mineral rights, it's cocoa. You talked about that with Lou.
Yeah.
And tourism can be a great thing, but some countries don't know how to embrace it. The first time we went to Russia, and I've only been there once, but there we were in Russia for a few days. And I'm like, hey, we're tourists. We have dollars.
Right.
And they just didn't care.
They didn't care.
I'm like, okay, you're dropping the ball here, Russia. This is the new world. Americans with dollars.
No, not impressed. That's how it is. But in Ghana, it's a little different because the dollar goes 4-1. Sometimes you can buy things with American dollars there. The local currency is called cities. But $4 is about, $1 is about 4 cities.
Yeah,
4.4. So you go down there and live like a king, John.
It's funny because King John, the nickname I go by here, is what you had put on a bracelet for me. It's a beautiful, like, dark chocolate-colored leather band, but then it's stitched with red, yellow, and green thread. I presume the colors of Ghana.
Yes.
There's the flag on one side and King John in letters across the top. Griff's got one that says Griff. And
yes, thank you.
And no, they're problem. Beautiful. They're beautiful. Yeah. So thank you for thinking of us on your travels. And let's push, promote, and get more folks to go to Ghana with you next year.
Let's do it. I'll be more thoughtful next year in using this platform to bolster the trip. And I appreciate you for helping me with that, too.
When you do go with him, though, don't bring your dog in a case that's put in the overhead bin, for crying out loud.
Don't be one of those people.
It's just a real sad story. It's tragic, as tragic as the death of a small dog can be. He was put in the overhead bin, and I don't know all of the details about
this. Story.
Yeah, so there was a family. They got on the plane. They had their dog in a dog carrier. There might have been a language barrier between the airline attendant and the child or the young person who was told to put the bag in the overhead compartment and did. The dog barked for a while, like a couple of hours in flight. Eventually, the dog stopped, and the dog died. I don't, you know, so many things are wrong about this story, like, didn't anybody witness this? Didn't anybody hear the dog? Didn't anybody go, that's wrong. You can't put the dog in the overhead compartment. This is insane. I don't think you should be bringing anything on an airplane, you know, except yourself. Airplanes are for human beings. If you have a service dog, sure. If you have a comfort dog, sure. But after that, I don't think you should have your pet on the plane to begin with. I also don't want you to bring a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken or a bag of McDonald's that you just bought in the concourse and rushed on. We all share the same air up there, and for some reason that just ruins it for the rest of us. Steve Cochran was talking this week about the strangest things people have seen on their flight. And I want to open the phone lines and let you respond. He was just taking some texts. But what's the weirdest thing you saw or witnessed? I'm thinking of some of the texts.
There was just a story about a month ago, do you remember the United Airlines denied an emotional support peacock on one of their flights?
They were talking about that, too. I'm sorry. I mean, oh, Lord. If you have an emotional support peacock, you probably need an emotional support peacock. But you can't bring that on my airplane. And a lady called, and she said, here's what happens, too. If a person has a pet on the plane, and they're legally got the pet on the plane, and then you go to the airport, and you're getting on the plane, and you have an allergic reaction to the dog, you have to get off. The pet stays on. I guess because the pet's attached to another human who has a right to be there. But they trump you when the two of you are not compatible.
Wow.
Hadn't thought about that. I'm not sure how that's supposed to go. Here's my phone number, 312-981-7200. Call or text 312-981-7200. And then the other story is the dog that went to Japan. He was supposed to go somewhere domestically, and they went to pick up their dog, and it was the wrong dog, and their dog flew to Japan. And then eventually they were all reunited. I don't know how all that stuff happens, but those two stories made me wonder, what's the strangest thing you've seen on your flight? 312-981-7200. Call or text. I'm sitting in the Allstate Showcase studio, by the way, on Michigan Avenue. Pete McMurray will probably walk by soon in some ridiculous, fantastic green suit. But people are wearing green suits and green clothes, and they are all heading to and from the Chicago River that was about an hour and a half ago, dyed green. It'll stay that way for a few more hours. And the parade kicks off at noon. It's about 35 degrees downtown Chicago. This is WGN. We're talking about strange things we've all seen on planes. Domiti, you go first.
My aunt, on her way to America for the first time, tried to bring a cauldron of okra soup on the plane. Now, when I say a cauldron, I'm talking about a huge, heavy cast iron metal thing with soup with fish heads and chicken feet and all types of strange things in it. And needless to say, she got into a big argument in multiple languages with the flight attendant and didn't make that flight.
Can't bring a cauldron on the plane.
Wait a minute. What's I thought this was America, the land of the free. You can't. I can't bring a cauldron of chicken feet in here.
How can I not bring my soup? I spent 3 days making this soup. Yes, yes. Not in the land of the free, ma'am. I'm sorry.
What's more American than a cauldron? I just love the word cauldron. It's so funny.
Where's the America I used to know?
When we'd all gather around our cauldrons. No, oh, man, that's funny.
Well, nobody called. Domiti wins. That's over. You can't beat that.
I think you might have something. This is horrifying.
Line one is Steve. You're on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hi, John. My wife works for the United Airlines, and she's the gate agent, so she opens the doors when the plane comes to the gate to let passengers off.
Yeah.
And she did it on one flight, and after everybody disembarked, the flight attendants came up to her and just were shaking their heads saying, "I thought I'd seen everything, but this takes the cake." They said there was a woman on board with her cat, and the woman was breastfeeding her cat on the plane, and people were just disgusted. And so the flight attendant said, "Would you mind at least, you know, just covering up, you know, while you're doing that?" And she said, "If this was a human baby, you would not tell me to do that." And she refused to do it. And it was, and so my wife went back and told, in the break room, told the other people, and they were all grossed out. And so they looked it up on YouTube, and sure enough, there are people, you know, on YouTube doing this.
That's a thing.
The lady said, "If, you know, I go to my doctor to get medication so that I can lactate and, you know, breastfeed my cat." So she's really serious about it. So I don't know why it's a thing, but apparently it is.
Hold on a second, Steve. Hey, Domati.
Yeah.
You're in second place.
I see. Yeah, clearly.
You got to say that. I bet that cat didn't die on that plane, though.
Well, no.
So that's something.
You know, though,
I mean, that's a little bit.
And that's a woman brooking for a fight, too. It's like, you know, it's bad enough we're all just trying to get along on this airplane for a few hours. If a lady wants to breastfeed her cat in flight, let her, right? I mean, because she's obviously had this conversation before, and she's not going to lose. So just let her breastfeed her cat.
I smell a True Life episode.
Man.
Okay, it's truly speechless.
All right, Steve, I'm going to hang up now. I appreciate it if you'd never call this radio station again.
I'll try not to.
Yeah,
thank you.
Bye.
You thought you wanted everybody's craziest story.
Well, I asked for it.
You asked for it.
I said, "Hey, tell," but I didn't say, "Tell me that." I thought you were going to say, "John, I don't know what you were going to say."
Boy, there was a guy with stinky feet. He took his shoes off.
There you go.
Oh, boy.
There you go.
Oh, no.
Some sort of cultural malaprop. Something where these people from Spain, I'll tell you.
Well, come on now. Well, easy.
Sorry, Spaniards. It's 10:53. Well, just one more call here. Bill, you're on WG, and what did you want to say? Hi.
Yeah, John, I'm really irritated about all this stuff going on. Everybody thinks this is humorous. Well, personally, I'm visually handicapped, and I have friends who have seeing eye dogs, and we've been taking dogs on planes for years and years and years with no problem, and we haven't had any problem until now all of a sudden people start bringing on, feeding their cats, nurse feeding them, bringing in goats and
peacocks,
all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Well, that kind of stuff needs to stop, sure, because I meant. The seeing-eye dog is a service dog really necessary for a piece of travel because, you know, Delta Airline now has a deal that if your mother, say, dies today, you cannot get on board for 48 hours without a doctor permit and a written stuff. Now, is your mother going to notify and say, "Hey, I'm dying next Saturday"?
I'm not laughing, and listen, I understand your anger about this, Bill, and you're not the first time I've heard about this.
I'm speaking for this for the visually handicapped.
No, I get it. Ridiculous. I get it. You know I'm not laughing at or talking about you when we have this conversation, right?
Right, I know, but the thing they need to do is get rid of all this other crap on the plane they've got on the plane.
That's what I said. I see here. Listen,
get rid of the you know peacock on the plane. Put it in storage.
Bill, I appreciate you listening. Listen, Bill, I'm not going to argue with you because you were on the same side. We hear you loud and clear.
Okay.
Have a good day now.
Alrighty.
All right. That's Bill, and he's mad. And that is happening out there. People, by the way, some folks are just walking by on Michigan Avenue. Hi out there. I'm John Williams. What's your name?
Hi, John Williams. I'm Therese Humphrey that calls you about the trials for MS.
Oh my gosh.
I'm so impressed.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe this.
Yes.
Okay. We're live on the radio right now.
I understand.
Who's that handsome fella standing next to you?
This would be my fiance.
Hi, fella. How are you?
Doing pretty good. About you?
I'm John. She's lovely, isn't she?
Yes.
So she calls in on our bright side.
Yes.
She suffers from MS.
Yes.
She's on a trial medication.
Yes.
You look and are doing fantastic. You've been telling us about it on the radio.
I know.
Three times you've called in on the bright side. And after you call in, people similarly afflicted are saying, "What's the trial? How can we find out more about it?
Give him my number. I told him.
And you gave it to Elif, right?
Elif, yes.
So we have your contact information.
Call us.
But how are you doing?
Awesome.
Oh, you look terrific.
I mean, it's like phenomenal.
Isn't that amazing?
I know. And thank you for supporting us when you say it on the radio.
Yeah. So, and who am I supporting again?
Well, you're supporting the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. I'm an ambassador and an activist that goes to Washington to keep our research going.
Well, let's all support that. You look great in green, by the way.
Thank you, sir.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
How about that?
Leave again.
I'll try not to.
Okay, have a good one.
Likewise.
And I'm with you. You don't need to put dogs on an airplane.
Well, don't get me in trouble.
I won't.
Don't get me in trouble.
I won't.
Bill's going to call back. Unless you need a dog on the plane. Hi, ladies. How are you?
Can I make a shout out to my friend really quick?
Sure. What's your name?
My name's Ellie, her name is Kaylee. And today is her birthday. She's turning 23, and she just got engaged this week.
Oh, so. Nice, yeah. Nice. Is she one of these ladies here?
She's this one.
That's Kaylee with the golden earrings. Are you Irish?
No.
You look lovely and Irish.
Thank you.
And who's your friend here?
Emily. Hi.
Emily, how are you? Where are you ladies from?
Minneapolis.
Are you kidding?
Hey.
No.
I lived by Lake Harriet for a very long time.
We love that area.
What street, what neighborhood did your fiance live on?
Well, we got engaged by Harriet Brasserie.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Minneapolis is a great town.
Yeah, it is.
But it ain't this, is it?
No, it's crazy. Awesome.
Isn't this awesome? Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, you too. It's like that downtown Chicago right now. Folks coming and going, everybody wearing green. What was the statistic we had earlier? Here it is.
27%?
Yes. 27% of Americans plan to go to a bar or restaurant today. That is huge. 27% of us will be at a bar or restaurant today. I think if today was a Thursday, it's still 27%. And 83% of the 149 million Americans that will somehow celebrate St. Patrick's Day, half of us, 83% of us will be wearing green. And Michigan Avenue is in blossom on that as they head to the Green River. We'll get you the news next on WGN. Perhaps he was gathering news or one of Lindsay's chipped beef sandwiches.
I was talking to Lou Manfredini.
Were you talking to Manfredini?
Yeah, I was talking to Lou.
How unlike Lou to disrupt a show that's going on with his cheerful input. It's 10 minutes after 11 o'clock on WGN. As you just heard, Blackhawks hockey, it's another noon puck drop. Joe is telling you that the pregame coverage starts at 11:30 here on WGN Radio. I want you to listen to that and enjoy it, and I also want the Blackhawks to win. We're all rooting for it. I just want to make sure I'm clear on two other game times. One is White Sox baseball. Are we doing a game today or tomorrow, Joe?
No game today. I'm taking a quick look at the schedule right now. Friday the 23rd against the Mariners looks like the next one on the air.
Exhibition or preseason exhibition, Cactus League.
Spring training baseball.
Spring training game. And then the Ramblers of Loyola play tonight at 5:10
against
5:10.
Tennessee.
5:10. Okay. You know, they have been a Cinderella of this story, but this is a tournament that has two 13s winning and, of course, a 16. So I don't know that Loyola is getting overshadowed, but people are sure talking about that Virginia loss.
Yeah, it kind of stole the show a little bit.
All right, so we do a podcast here on WGNradio.com and at WGN Radio. I don't know where you follow your finer podcast, but it's called The Mincing Rascals, and I hope that you listen to, download it, and share it. It's called The Mincing Rascals, the podcast we broadcast in part on Saturdays. It almost always includes, and does today, Chicago Tribune columnist Eric Zorn, editorial writer Kristen McQueary, editorial cartoonist Scott Stantis, our own Steve Bertrand, and me. Among the things we were talking about, Governor Rauner vetoed a bill this week that would have put more regulations on gun shops in Illinois. The timing of that, just the same week, actually, after students marched to protest gun violence, was surprising. I thought he would wait until after the primary on Tuesday if he was going to veto it. In fact, I thought this would have been a pretty easy bill to sign. And then Eric Zorn said,
I share the skepticism of my colleagues on the editorial board about this bill. Believe it or not, I feel like it adds a ton of bureaucracy to these gun dealers, and the benefit of it is not clear. I think there is definitely a principled reason for not signing this bill. And I think that he signed it when he did because he wants to bolster his right-wing credentials. He's worried about his right flank. But again, you look at this bill, and Kristen can probably speak to this better than I can, which is that it's not clear that this is the kind of thing that you need to address gun violence. But
I would just say that this was just one bill. This was just regulation of gun shops, bump stocks, regulating ARs, age. You know, limiting age. Those passed both chambers with, or at least the House, with a much bigger margin. This actually barely, the gun shop bill, you had 20 Democrats in each chamber who did not support this bill. You had 50 Republicans. It was not very bipartisan. It barely passed both houses. And I think there is this concern that while well-intended, government overcorrects. And this was just would have tightly regulated gun shops more than any other state. And while we can still look at some sort of licensing, this one went too far.
Well, when has government ever overcorrected when it comes to gun violence? I mean, I understand what you're saying, but damn, not when it comes to gun violence.
Yeah, but gun regulation. I mean, I don't even know that this I don't think you can draw a direct line between regulating gun shops more and reducing gun violence. I mean, I don't think we won't know
until we try.
Yeah, well,
I'm not saying they shouldn't be licensed and regulated, but right. Do you know what this bill did?
No, but I'm for
it. Tell us.
In general, instead of just going after the bad actors, which we know are out there, we know there are certain gun shops in the suburbs where a majority of guns recovered at crime scenes are traced back to those places. Fine, go after those people. But then you have all of these mom-and-pop shops. There are more than 2,500 businesses in Illinois that sell guns, and this would have required surveillance camera, would have required the onus on them to install surveillance, to train employees a certain way, to turn over records, to have certain ways that they monitor inventory when they don't have any sort of a record of not doing a good job at that.
No, so, I'm not playing the small violin for gun dealers necessarily, but it's not clear to me that, I mean, the problem is, it tends to be these straw purchasers. I mean, that's really what they're getting at. That's the problem that needs to be attacked and addressed. And this bill seemed to have,
they can't initiate regulation for the straw purchase shops without initiating them for everyone, right? I mean, you can't.
Well, here's the other issue here in Chicago, particularly. The gun violence here in Chicago is many of the guns, as the Tribune has reported and others, that those gun shops in Indiana, which this does not touch. I would also mention, and John touched on it for a second, is the optics of this, is that why not wait till after the primary? Well, I think Governor Rauner saw this as an opportunity to appear to be pro-gun while still shooting down a bill that didn't have broad support and has questionable results.
He said he wanted something more comprehensive. He, you know, if he should have asked Eric and Kristen for some advice on how to communicate about this. You two are just now more compelling than he was.
I usually am.
in defending his position. It's just been awful. It's been awful. I don't think J.B. Pritzker has done a very good job about defending his offshore accounts either. And the Tribune is reporting a lot about this in yet another terrific column your colleague Darlene Glanton wrote in the Chicago Tribune today, that J.B. is putting into his campaign, on average, over $188,000 a day.
JB He's not has, one of us, was, I think, oh, her headline yeah, right, or something. Right, right,
it, was right. It was a very strong column. She was angry when she wrote that column.
Well, and really, she said, stop peddling yourself as a guy who's taking selfies with people at concerts, and he's going to fight for us. We've heard that all the time. But her point was, when a state is bankrupt as ours, and you are doing everything you can to not only park money offshore to avoid paying taxes, but then essentially lying about it, you know, maybe we'll discover otherwise, but it sure doesn't look like he's being truthful. I wonder how costly, pun intended, this is going to be.
Will it be like the Swift boat, or this is the duck boat?
Yes,
truthers.
There's your question.
He's even seen the paper today. He's got it already.
I just heard the sheep in sheep's clothing back there.
What do you guys think of that, though? I mean, it's a little wonky, this thing about offshore accounts. I don't know if that affects me or not. But
it's math.
It's math, right. And you know, they, in her column, she points out he pays $455,000 or something like that last year in income taxes in Illinois, which is a lot. But this is a guy worth billions, with many millions in income. But I don't know if that is a reason to vote against him. You know,
I think
what I mean?
Lying about it is a reason to vote against him. And he did. He absolutely did. When asked about it, his campaign issues were that his grandfather set up these trusts, he doesn't touch them, and all the money goes to charity. Well, that ain't the truth.
He and his brother, yes. I mean, his sibling, have these offshore accounts that are set aside to, in one case, have like a duck boat tourist industry on the Chicago River that was set up in what, like 2011?
Yeah.
It's not true, and you have his other you have progressives coming out and calling him a liar. I think it's pretty damaging.
Yes, and I think this also underscores what people may have forgotten, which is that both Pritzker and Kennedy said they would release their tax returns and have not. I mean, they've released, like, you know, the first pages of a couple of years. But the finances of these guys, especially Pritzker, are opaque. And this story, I mean, you're right, it's a nerdy story. You try to read it and figure out, okay, what does this mean exactly? Yeah. How are they dodging these taxes? How does this work? But the overall sense you get from that and from the Channel 11 debate on Wednesday night, Pritzker is not being forthcoming about his finances.
Did you see the NBC5, I think it was Marianne Ahern's story, where she just ran photos of all of their homes? Go look at that. To me, that was a visual of what this story tried to tell.
Of the Pritzker homes or of
the Kennedys and the Pritzkers. The Pritzker homes are just jaw-dropping. And it's almost surprising that he still is kind of has this everyman sort of persona when you look at what kind of property he actually owns. Not one of us, as Darlene was saying.
He's not wearing a Carhartt jacket. I mean, you know, Rauner does the same thing.
You meant to say Warren, didn't you?
Warren.
Oh, right.
Warren.
Yeah. Correction.
Warren Carhartt.
Which is what our current governor did to prove that he was one of us. You know, the numbers are so weird, isn't it? Like, we all want $1 million. How about having $1 billion? And then how about having so much money that you could put $50-60 million into your campaign so far. That's generations of wealth that you're just putting into a vanity project. And then
creating jobs. Biggest job creator in Illinois.
You know, and you overlook, too, the governor had a rough week, but he did name the bicentennial beer. And I just want to make sure.
He did do that.
Yeah, the 1870 out of Petersburg. So I think we need to give him that.
Students walked out across Chicagoland on Wednesday, across the country, to protest gun violence and honor the victims in the Parkland shooting. Should they be applauded or punished, Eric? What did you make of the kids?
They should be beaten severely. No, they should be applauded for that. That's a great expression.
Some schools are giving them detentions.
Yeah. Yes, that's not cool.
It's silly.
My favorite Twitter exchange was a lawyer said these kids, a Texas school district said, we're going to, you know, suspend these kids if they walk out. And this fellow posted saying, I'm a barred attorney in Texas, and I'll defend these kids grass. And one of the team, you know, one of the alt-right Twitter guys says, no wonder you're barred there. You're an idiot. And it's just like, no.
I think it was Romeoville High School who said, you know, you guys can leave, you can walk out, but if you walk out, you also are required to attend an after-school meeting with the state legislator. And they were bringing legislators in then to talk to the kids about the issues, which I think that's a pretty good trade. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I think there were some schools where kids were just standing outside on their phone doing cartwheels. That I'm not too crazy about. But if it's raising awareness of the issue, and particularly if it's high school kids, I'm not crazy about little
middle
kids.
Schooler, yeah.
You know, grammar school kids. I like a good protest.
I'm how many didn't. At my son's high school, or the high school Lyons Township where my kids went to school, several hundred kids walked out, but it's a school of over 3,000. Less than half, I think, of the kids at LT walked out. And the numbers are probably similar to a lot of schools. And I don't know if that was a conscious decision by some of the kids to take a side on the issue, or they just wanted another half hour to study, read, or sleep.
Apple polishing the teacher, right?
Right. Well, whatever. But I mean, I would be upset if my kid didn't walk out, I guess is my point. I think this is one of the few times where student activism, however inconsequential, it's not going to change the world, but good grief, if ever there was something to walk out of school on for 17 minutes.
I agree. And I agree with applaud you these kids. I do. And I applaud open protests. And they need to do this to keep this movement alive. Because what happens every single time when we have one of these mass shootings is there's a lot of tumult and excitement and protest and talks of petitions and legislation. And then a few weeks later, it goes away. And the NRA knows that. And gun rights advocates know that if they just wait it out, the passion ebbs, and then we move on.
Well, they're good people. They're good people, Eric.
On both sides.
We'll get to that in a minute. We did get to that in a minute. Other issues. So that's Steve Bertrand, Eric Zorn, Kristen McQuarrie, and Scott Standis. I'm John Williams. And that's part of the Mincing Rascals. Our Mincing Rascals broadcast is part of a bigger podcast we get. I hope you subscribe to it, comment on it, and share it with your friends. Somebody just called producer Griff and said, hey, where was that story about the homes of the candidates? And Kristen said that she thought was a Marianne Ahern piece. She thought it was on Channel 5. I guess if you go to WMAQ TV, you might see that story. story there. And I'm trying to remember now if I quoted the number correctly from Darlene Glanton. This is how much money J.B. Pritzker has on average been putting into his campaign per day. One candidate putting into his campaign per day of his own money, $188,000 is the correct number. It's 1122, 1125, and 35 degrees downtown Chicago. This is WGN. I'm John Williams. Let's visit here for a couple minutes, and then we'll get you ready for Blackhawks hockey. John Weideman with the call at noon. Our pregame coverage at 1130 on WGN Radio. The Loyola Ramblers tip it off a little after 5 o'clock this evening. What are the smart people saying about the game today, Joe?
Well, you got two really good defensive teams. Tennessee is actually ranked 25th in the nation with scoring defense. Loyola is now 5th. Obviously, both teams are very hot. You get to these stages of the tournament, all teams are pretty hot. But, I mean, if Loyola can put up a good defensive stop on Tennessee, they've got a pretty good shot. And I really liked what they did against Miami, but they didn't really step on the gas until, yeah, you know, towards the end. So hopefully, yeah, they play a more complete game today and they get a better shot.
Your predecessor, Sam Panionovich, is doing a bookie radio, as I call it, out in Vegas these days. He has Loyola winning today's game. What do you have?
I have them in the Sweet 16. That's,
wow,
that's as far as I have them going. I'm a big upset guy, though. I love the upsets. I love picking, but the thing is, I pick too many of them.
You have perfect brackets,
no,
still, don't you?
No, before, I picked all the wrong upsets.
Before last night's Virginia loss, there were two perfect brackets in the country, and now there are none. Okay, we're going to get out of the way. Griffin Filipich, producer, thanks. Hey, Joe, nice to visit with you on Saturdays. Domati Pongo, too. And a shout-out to Ravi Beishwald, who was from Channel 7, the MC at that last night Dancing with the Celebrities event. He did a great job. Everybody did a great job. The video of me dancing is on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook.